Welcome to this Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here today with...
I'm Neil Weiler. I'm one of the NOC leads here for Black Hat.
And I'm Bart Stump, also one of the NOC leads here at Black Hat.
We're going to be talking about what is being seen across the network here at a major event, but also why enterprises should consider setting up their own NOCs in order to defend their premises. Can you give me some idea of the level of attacks you've been seeing here over the last couple of days?
So here it's not as bad as we see for the U.S. show. It seems like people are fairly well behaved, at least, you know, either that or they're just a lot more stealthy. So
in our perspective, yes.
No, yeah, but it's actually, it's been pretty good. Most of the stuff that we've been seeing from attack-wise has been a demonstration that somebody's kicking off that's been going across the network, or when the training classes were going on, we had a lot higher amount of traffic because they're actually teaching different techniques, and some of those classes use AWS, like, you know, they're using cloud services to host their labs in, which I always think is comical because it's like, does Amazon know that you're launching all these attacks at their infrastructure?
Tiny little thing about terms and
services. Yeah, right, exactly. So, it hasn't been too bad as far as from a malicious attack perspective. At the U.S. show, it's a little bit different. We have some other conferences that are going on the same week, where you have B-Sides Las Vegas and DEF CON, a little bit different crowd going to those conferences, and they like to come over to Black Hat and mess around. We also have a much higher... population to pull from, so the chances of having some folks who want to hurl attacks at one another are greater. But yeah, I mean, we've had a pretty good show. Things that we have seen have all panned out to be
research or legitimate use cases that.
So what would you normally expect to see at a show? People just trying to do some drive-by malware or some
drive-by malware. We see different variants of malware that haven't been seen before, so we do get some stuff like that where we have they're basically like trying it out. Well, even down to, you know, normal kind of low-level attack type of things, where we've had individuals like walking around throwing USB drives on the floor and hoping that people pick them up.
It was a big deal a couple of years ago. Yeah. There was USB drives everywhere.
We walked in, the guy was like, literally, we could see him throwing the USB drives through the classroom doors, like into the training classes, like trying to like chuck them on the floor and see if he can get someone to pick it up. But yeah, it's been a pretty good show here in London, so we're pleased. The few things that we have had have turned out to be okay.
It's not very entertaining for us, in that sense, but we're pleased. It's always a good time when we don't have to deal with much nonsense like that. Some of the other stuff that I guess you could say is other guys that may have actually been infected, whether they were on site or not. We see CNC traffic and that kind of stuff. We haven't even really seen that this show, so it's nice.
On a normal show in the States, when you're looking at the amount of traffic coming across, you said that you're seeing people trying out new malware.
True.
How much of the relationship do you have with some of the vendors at the show to be able to give them a direct feed into their own security teams?
Yeah, so we don't share the traffic from the network with anybody that isn't part of the NOC team. So a couple of years ago, the network had just grown to a scale that we were like, we have to buy some enterprise gear. We used to do it with, you know, OpenBSD boxes, like on a SoCrisp box, and like...
running PF and manually configuring and scripting to do all the changes and firewall rule changes, etc. It just became very unmanageable and scalable.
We started talking about having 60 plus classrooms with 100 to, you know, 50 to 100 students apiece during training classes, and then flipping that into the attendees, where you have 15,000 people who are all using the wireless infrastructure and stuff. It didn't scale, at least not for us. And so we were like, okay, we should get some enterprise gear in here. And that's when we started reaching out, to some vendors and saying, initially we were like, we should buy some stuff. And I think it was Bart who said, you know, I bet if we ask somebody if they'll just give it to us, like they'll just do it. And so that's what we did. So as far as like anybody having visibility into the traffic, really the only folks who have visibility into it are Fortinet, who is our hardware partner, and then RSA, who's our operational intelligence. And so the guys that are from RSA, and they brought a full team to this show as well, they're doing like real-time traffic analysis of everything that's coming across the wire. So even to the point where we just came back from lunch, we went and got lunch, and while we're at lunch, I was getting text messages saying, I'm seeing this type of traffic going here and here. Is that something you want us to look at deeper? And we're like, oh, okay, well, that should be legitimate, but let's look to it to, you know, put that off to the side. Or we saw a drop in traffic in these areas during this time. Is that something we should be concerned about? And then we know whether or not we should dig into it. And so we're getting operational intelligence all the time from the RSA team, which is great.
There's a lot of panic going on over the DDoS attack.
Sure.
In reality, it was always waiting to happen. Why should companies be surprised when they suddenly discover that their network's being trashed by a bunch of uncontrolled devices?
I mean, I think they shouldn't. and that's the real answer, right? Don't be surprised. If you never worry about security and then something happens to you, you have nobody to blame but yourself. I think it's getting your average everyday user to understand what it is that they're bringing into their homes or what it is that they're hooking to the side of their house, those type of things. Right now, you know, we're basically in the days of, hey, you should lock your door when you leave the house, you know, and people aren't locking the door. In this case, it's just a digital one. And so it's like anybody can stroll in and look at whatever they want and decide to take something if they feel the need. And they are. Yeah.
And they absolutely are.
Yeah, and the thing about our world is that it's a digital one, so a lot of times you never even know that they were there.
I mean, I've spoken to a number of manufacturers, and part of their problem in the white brown goods space is they have very, very tight bill of materials.
Yeah.
By the time they have that internet board, they're at the point of no money allowed, so they can't go and buy security suites. How do we fix that? Do you think we need to get the regulators more involved? You know, a bit of consumer law, or do we just beat them up in the press more?
No, I mean, I think there is something to be said for beating them up in the press a little more and making sure that we hold them accountable. The problem is exactly what you just said, is that they go through this entire development process and then they get to the end and they say, well, we don't have any money for security, where the actual thing that they should be doing is saying, like, hey, if we don't do the security portion of this right, we're going to end up in the press or we're going to be held liable in a legal stance. So they should start with security and then say, okay, you know, here's how are we going to secure this if we're going to make this item? And then every step of the way say, are we still secure? Are we still secure? If we introduce this, will we still be secure? And then by the end of it, you have a product. And if you can't build that product without putting security in it, then you don't build the freaking product. You know?
I think it's a mixture of those. I mean, bashing them in the press room would be, and you know, in the press would be a huge deal to a lot of them. I think they get off too easy in that sense of the Target and Home Depot breaches. Everybody kind of thought that would be, they would be hurt in a lot. Mm-hmm. The brand would be hurt and they wouldn't have the same amount of consumers coming in, but that it's proven to not really be the case. They haven't lost money. They haven't. And so
it was like a blip.
It was a blip on the radar, right? There was obviously a dip, but it's blown away. People forget 6 months later that ever happened, and they go swipe their credit card and do the same thing there. And so I think that's a big deal. But there also needs to be, I think, some type of responsibility held for those people. There's no real responsibility to the company that is breached. And if we start enforcing legal action, like you said in that case, I think it'll force a lot of these guys to say, well, we're not going to stand in a courtroom and spend millions of dollars, so let's spend that millions on the actual security and secure it up front. So I think there's a real mix of what that needs to do, but we're far from where we need to be.
Yeah, I think those end users too. I mean, like you mentioned Target. What cost Target more was then going out and having to change the point of sale systems on all of their stores everywhere. It was a significant expense. And there's fines and all these other things. But from a customer standpoint, like I said, that was a blip. Like people were like, ooh, Target. And then a week later, they were back shopping at Target, myself included. Like, I mean, I still shop at Target. But now they have, you know, where they didn't have chip, you know, readers and stuff like that. Now they do in the point of sale systems and they use them. And I was standing in line behind someone and they were using their chip on the card, and then and you have to wait a little longer than a swipe, and the guy started complaining. He was like, oh, I hate these chip readers, they take so long. And I'm like, you're in the store that had a breach, like shopping on a point of sale terminal, which is right where the scene of the crime was, and you're annoyed because you have to wait a second and a half longer than your swipe takes. And it's just like, without the users buying in, like,
It's just you've got to have some kind of education there, I guess, to normal Joe, if you want to say that, that doesn't really understand what security means and what it means to them, I guess, is.
But if we look at education, we've tried that. We keep beating people up over technical education.
Sure.
We're just not addressing the underlying cultural issues here.
Sure.
Do you see that changing? I mean, we're at a technical show. In theory, everybody who's come to that door should be thinking about their devices. Their wireless should have been turned off when they left the house this morning. They should think before they turn it on. There's a whole set of processes that we would do because it's our day job.
Mm-hmm.
Are you finding that, from a business sense, the culture is changing in mentality, or is it just a case of, gotta get Wi-Fi, gotta get Wi-Fi?
Yeah, see, I think that's the thing. Like, that's part of what we like about being on the Black Hat Network team, is where at the end of the US show, we don't do it for the international shows, they're smaller and again less craziness, but we do basically a state of the network. These are the attacks that we saw, this is the amount of malware we saw, but we also say, like, this is how much of the traffic was encrypted, this is the number of users, all those kind of things. And attendees really like that because they get to see, like, you know, into the fish tank. Like, it's like, this is what took place, and it's real data from a real network with people who should know better. And so if we're seeing only 50% of the traffic is encrypted that's flying across the network, and we're at the premier security conference in the world, what hope do we have for your average everyday user to go encrypt their traffic? They're not going to do it unless it's done for them.
But familiarity breeds contempt. You always get that arrogance of those people who think they know better.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things is, if we look at the history of technology, much of it starts at the home before it gets in the office.
Mm-hmm.
Color screens, sound. Wireless networks were much more prevalent in homes than they were in businesses for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
Much of this early stage IoT, very big, pushing in the home, starting to appear in business, connected fridges, dishwashers. They're following the line of connected printers that phoned home when they ran out of ink.
Mm-hmm.
There's that massive disconnect between it's consumer, it's not business grade, so IT teams ignore it. Where do we start to fix that?
I think you've seen some of that. I've seen a little bit of a shift. In my day job, I'm an SE and sell security products as well. I've seen a little bit of a shift with the whole BYOD, bring your own device to work, and some of that shift. Now with the IoT thing, and I think that the connectivity of everything, like you said, your toothbrush will tell you when it's time to change the brush or whatever the case may be. I think there's some visibility on it, but I think that the issue again comes back to security budgets and that sort of thing. So there's definitely got to be something that changes, but there's got to be something that gives there, and I'm not sure what that is in some cases. IoT is definitely a big deal, and how we secure it is, we're always a step behind, it feels like, on the blue team side.
Yeah.
So how you do it, you wait till a giant DDoS attack from IoT happens, and then we all say, oh shit, we need to figure out how to fix this. So it's the cart before the horse in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
You got to figure that out, and we've got to find out how to get ahead of this kind of thing. So
it's the same thing you see. You see that in companies where you try to push security, and you're like, we need to do this, we need to do this, we need to do this, and you think you have a buy-in to a certain level with management and that type of thing, but then it's budgets and blah, 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 and then there's a breach.
Yeah.
And as soon as there's a breach, there's lots of money. There's all this money for security and stuff like that. So I think Bart's right. I think to a certain extent, this DOS attack is the first of, like, oh,
mm-hmm.
we have to pay attention to this. Like, this isn't just, you know, something we can ignore. But it's also, I mean, you look at all these IoT devices, and damn, they're convenient.
Mm-hmm.
And people love convenience, and so they will fight for convenience over everything. And so if you don't have buy-in at the right levels, then there's always going to be someone who's just like, well, it's easier if we just do it this way. I mean, look at you know, these SCADA systems, like this like industrial control systems,
mm-hmm.
that were created in the 1970s. And now we're attaching wireless to them, so somebody can drive by it and do a quick, like, management of that. Or they're just hooking them to the networks, and now they can manage it remotely. And this was never, ever, 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 ever intended to be, you know, on a network, let alone on a wireless network that somebody can be sitting in a car across a parking lot connecting into the water mains, you know. And it's like, holy hell. Is this really the world we live in? But convenience trumps all.
Well, if we look at enterprise, they don't want to spend the money on buying technology for users anymore, because users will buy it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's good enough to work in the home, people will bring it in and use it in the office.
Sure.
So that boundary between enterprise and consumer has become so grey, even in very large enterprises, it's almost non-existent now. There seems to be a loss of risk understanding. There seems to be a loss of, why are we using this? There seems to be end users running around, as they did in the 80s when PCs first came out, and business departments going out and just buying technology and ignoring IT. Somewhere in the middle is a security team. Now, most of them are drowning under information at the moment. If they actually sat down and set up their own network operation centers in the same way that you guys are running from here, how much do you think that would give them A, a better view, and B, reduce their workload in terms of chasing the attack?
Well, I think that's why, like, so the Black Hat knock has evolved over, you know, the last decade and a half or whatever that we've been involved with it. And initially, with it being these, like, you know, open source, you know, crusty little boxes and stuff, and we tried to figure out how to get them to call home and do whatever, into what it is today. Now, there's not a packet that goes through this network that we don't have some type of visibility into. And people within Black Hat have said, like, oh, not, like, I don't say within Black Hat as the company, I mean, like, attendees mm-hmm. are like, oh, like, we're like the big bad spies spying on them. That's not what we're doing. We're not interested in what you're actually doing on the network, as long as it's not malicious, you know. But we have to have visibility. And, like, large-scale enterprises, if they're not looking at the data, like, then how can you ever properly defend the organization if you don't even know what's happening on mm-hmm. your network? And so they should immediately start looking at, like, read your logs. Like, let's just start there. Like, can we have somewhere where we can send all the logs and then know what's going on mm-hmm. out there on the network? What are the ingress and egress points for data within the network? If you don't know that somebody's swiped a credit card somewhere and you've got this, like, massive shadow IT going on, like, then there's no way for you to address that. Having a centralized location with a significant amount of intelligence into what it is that's happening on your network, what protocols are used the most, where that data goes, you're blind.
There's a lot of companies who have outsourced that, though, to partners, to security vendors.
Sure.
The problem is those vendors don't have the context of the data.
Exactly.
Yes, they might know at a basic level that looks like a nested, like somebody's social security number, that looks like a payroll number, that looks like a passport number, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is they don't know the context of that data relating to that company and that's and the people the company's collected that data from. How much tighter do we need to sort that relationship out? Because it's a throw it over the wall and forget almost.
It's an interesting point you bring up. So I literally work for an MSSP designing custom solutions and making all that work. You're right. You're absolutely right. But we've also kind of come full circle. And I think the reason being is that is a cost issue. Mm-hmm. Why are we sending it to MSSPs in the first place? And it's a significant cost to set up your own SOC, to man it 24/7, to have the tools that help sort through the noise. Because as you said, there's so much data out there. We can go through the logs and we can look through the packets. But adding that context and sorting through the noise of what is relevant and what isn't to my environment is a big problem. And so I think it's a cost issue again, getting management buy-in to fund something like your full SOC or not. But I would prefer somebody sending their data to an MSSP than doing nothing with it as well. So I think there's something there. But
I think that's the first step. Like if you don't have that, then you should definitely be reaching out to people to do. And I think part of the problem is too with security is like we live in a talent vacuum. Mm-hmm. Like so you could buy all the bells and whistles and all the shiniest equipment and put it in a room and have displays with lots of pretty colors and graphs on it and then nobody understands a damn thing that's on the screen. Then that's not helping either.
It's not doing any good.
So going out and finding like a service provider who can come in and at least start doing that at the ground level until you can spin up your own team or educate them to the point that they're able to run things themselves. Also
or supplement that.
Right, exactly. Like some like where you're like, okay, well we have enough talent or we know we can do the level one analysis, but if we see something scary, we're gonna funnel that up to, you know, a partner who can do the level three.
But that's one of the things that's missing from that relationship. There
sure.
is no education from the MSSP back into the enterprise. They're not looking to do that. And the enterprises, to be fair, would look on that at the moment and say, well, hang on, if you're educating my staff and there's this vacuum, are you then going to poach these staff?
Mm-hmm.
We need to close that. Do you see any will at the moment from the MSSPs to want to create education programs, Do you see any will from enterprises to get involved in practical programs as opposed to just trying to buy in talent or buy in somebody from a university?
Right. I think that's hard because you're, especially when you're looking at the managed services folks, if it's not part of their business model to do education, which that I think really it's really the bigger shops that are doing the education stuff, but some of the smaller ones, they don't want to teach you because you're the paycheck. And so if they teach you, then you don't need
them
anymore.
Then you go away, right?
But the larger houses, you know, they don't have that issue. They're willing to go in and do like some hand holding and teach you what it is you're looking at and stuff like that because they know at the end of the day they're going to maintain that relationship one way or the other. I think it's just choosing the right partner, you know, and making sure that you have a plan for going forward and saying like, okay, well, this is what my enterprise needs. And if they come back and say, okay, well, we'll do this and this and this, and you're like, okay, well, what's the end road here? Like, what does this do for my analysts? When do they hit the point where they can do these things and they can't communicate that? Keep on looking, you know?
Yep.
Like, so, yeah. I think
so if I'm an IT manager or CISO of a large organization sat here in front of you, what's the first thing you're going to tell me to go out and start on in order to get my security fixed?
Centralized logging. Data. I mean, that's like for me, that's huge. Like, so my thing, like my day job is threat hunting, and so if you're not collecting all the logs from all the devices on the network, then you have no visibility into what they're doing. So it's the first place to start, and then I'm very much a proponent of full packet capture.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do see something in the logs and it is scary, then you can rebuild that session and say, okay, what actually took place? Or should it be something where it's a new piece of malware, a malware variant? You can pull that malware out of the stream, put it in a sandbox environment, find out what it actually does upon execution and that kind of thing. Like what actually took place here? What happened? If a phishing campaign comes into the environment, you can rebuild that phishing campaign in your lab. You can say, like, this is the email the way it was sent. Here's how it looked when they sent it out. Okay, if we see these indicators, we know we have blocked on those things. So it gives you the intelligence to be able to go and shore up the defense of the organization. So it's just about understanding what's happening on the network for me.
It's absolutely necessary to have those types of things, and I think it's a great starting point. And I hate to beat a dead horse, but the problem is we're talking about a half million pound dollar, whatever currency you're looking at, entry point for a lot of those tools. Those are great, and they'll give you all the visibility in the world. But then again, you have to have the talent, and the talent vacuum that we're in is a concern. So it's not an easy job, and if you were a C-level sitting across from me, I'd first pat you on the hand and say, I'm sorry, sir, and thank you for your service that you're doing to the industry. But it's not easy. It's definitely not easy to get all those tools and all the storage that you need for full packet captures, et cetera. It's very expensive. And so I think that there's got to be some give here from somebody, some of the open source tools to help with some of these. And there's a lot of those that have popped up. But then again, you come back to the talent vacuum and some of the issues you have there. But
Those
are absolutely things that you need.
You gotta
it's just
the,
a matter
you
of getting
the right people to have the right conversations, because that's the thing too. I mean, like, so enterprise class solutions like he's talking about for logs or packets are expensive, but they have all the bells and whistles and they remove some of the need to have additional folks in it, where open source is free, but then you have like
you have to have somebody that can program it and
yeah, instead of a CapEx, you know, issue, like it's like, you know, it's like, oh, if you have, you know, your budget is such that you can go out and just be like, oh, buy all the equipment because we don't have an OPEX budget that's going to be able to support that. We need it to do most of the stuff. We need machine learning and you know, analytics because we don't have humans who can do that. Then do that. If you work for a university and you can be like, I've got 30 students I can throw at this thing, then go open source because it's cheap. And you have the bodies that you can throw at it and say, like, you guys are going to go through and scrape all this data, or you're going to sanitize this information or do whatever. So, I mean, you have to do what's going to work for that particular organization. So wherever the budget lies, find a way to make it work.
Anybody out there is willing to sell you a widget or a tool or a box, true, whatever it is, that will solve one problem.
There's a whole expo for a whole yeah, they can't wait to help you.
It's just hard sorting through all the noise and what you can use and what works together. I mean, it's again, it's not an easy job. Those guys have a really hard job above us that make those decisions and hire the people to man them and that type of thing. It's definitely a hard job, but there's got to be, like I said, something that gives here. Otherwise, there's going to be a huge problem. And when people start dying from a hacker or something, that they killed a hospital and took out everything at a hospital, we've seen that with ransomware. There's not going to be much change. There's got to be a compelling event to somebody for a lot of that change, I think, and that's part of the problem. So.
Doesn't make me glad I'm not a CISO.
Yeah. I dreamed of being a CISO a few years ago, and then I got really deep into selling and seeing what some of these environments look like and consulting, etc. Like I don't know that I could handle it right now. That wouldn't be something that I'm all about right now. There's a lot of responsibility, and some of those guys, when a breach does happen, the responsibility falls on them. They're the ones that the head's rolling, just like a CEO that may have a problem when they don't meet goals for a quarter or two. They're the one getting the pressure, but if there's a breach, there's one guy to blame.
Thank you both for your time today.
Yeah, absolutely.
No
Thank
worries.
You.
Thanks for having us.